Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
lights. With tonight's guest, CEO of Two Bit Circus Foundation and ExoDexa, Dr. Leah Haynes.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, St. Finnegan. I am Mark Lejeune, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Does anyone else do this? These days, I've spent now several years on cell phones and on iPads. And so I've gotten used to certain experiences and certain behaviors. And so lately, I've been looking at photographs, like actual photographs or photo books. Or it happens also when I'm reading a magazine in particular, with all the different ways that a magazine is shaped on a page. I will take my thumb and my forefinger or my pointer finger, and I will press against the page or the photo, and I will move my fingers apart, expecting the image or the text or whatever it is to enlarge. And it doesn't happen. And I will either get mildly annoyed because it doesn't work like it does on an app or on my phone or on the iPad, or I will be humored by how funny, how quickly I have taken on that habit. And I mention this because I was inspired, or it reminded me of that, and I'm thinking of our guest who is an educator, and we're going to talk more about all of this in a moment. And she looks at issues, and among other things, how schools and teachers today are competing with phones, apps, iPads, computers, and highly engaging video games, which is even more for students' attention. So that's what they're competing against. And that's because the gaming industry, as they say, both our guest and Nolan Bushnell, who we'll talk about in a little bit as well, that the gaming industry knows how to keep kids captivated and aspiring to the next level. So here it is. I wasn't born with phones and iPads and computers, for that matter. So, and I haven't been using them really for that long. It's been years now, but I'm already used to that habit, and I try and use it all the time that I can. Now, and that's not even talking about social media. That's not even talking about addiction to all kinds of electronic possibilities and opportunities that are not technically available in school. In school, actually, speaking of, I know we used to pass around little handwritten notes. Nowadays, kids are texting each other or talking to each other on the social, or maybe worse, talking about each other on the social, and sometimes not in a good way. So some people think it's harmless, but again, thanks to information I've gotten from our guest, according to UNICEF, over 600 million children and adolescents are unable to reach minimum proficiency levels in reading and math, even though 2/3 of them are in school. This is truly a conversation that matters. And so some people might think it's harmless. Other people think it's grave and are looking at the grave implication. And our guest sees an opportunity to course correct. Like what I did there, Mark? Course correct. And it may be a little bit of, if you can't beat them, join them. Because maybe they have something good going and maybe we can learn from it.
You know, if you continue to gamify your monologues, we'll learn that much more every week. I am so excited for tonight's conversation that matters. We are so blessed. My three favorite words basically is are learning through play.
Mm.
And we talk about that so often in our, you know, conversations together.
Yep.
And that's what I think is at the essence of here. And so excited to hear about what Dr. Leah has going with Nolan and what they are bringing forward. And wow, talk about elevated talent. St. Finnegan, we're blessed. We're going to be blessed with his talent soon. So I'm excited for tonight's show.
You know, it's interesting actually mentioning St. Finnegan. He and I, without him even knowing who our interview guest was, he and I ended up talking about, and he led the conversation on education and how kids are tuned in and how kids like to play and learn and all that, and how it's bred out of us.
There is so much synchronicity. He and I connected also before the show and was talking about visions that he's had about 360, which, you know, is obviously where we've been and where we're going. So I think something bigger is going to grow out of this evening.
Indeed. Well, in the meantime, we've titled this episode Introducing a Revolutionary Transformation of the Educational System. This is episode 848. Of the Life Changes Show, and our interview guest is a leading educator. She is CEO of ExoDexa and CEO of 2-Bit Circus Foundation. She is author of one of the books that we're going to be talking about today, and she's a mother among all these things. Dr. Leah Haynes, welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, and I love all that you had to say in the introduction about video games and learning through play and all of that stuff that should be the way we're approaching education, but has not been so far.
Well, actually, let's take us, because as I was thinking about the subject matter in the book and what you and I had talked about previously, and then that led to the monologue, I actually don't know. I made it sound kind of fun, but what is the school like with electronics and kids paying attention or not these days?
Well, it's hard, because what you said in the intro, teachers are competing with really highly produced and seductive platforms that, you know, are engaging and I think some of them actually offer really important elements, the importance of rigor in study. There's research that came out of Cambridge a few years ago that talked about the fact that kids who play video games more than, and I'm not going to have the exact hours right, but it was something like more than 10 or 15 hours a week, build more rigor into their life. They see themselves as being able to get by the roadblocks, to get past the problems.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and we have a generation of kids who really don't want to try anything that they don't know they're going to be good at. So video games, you know, the tide has turned a bit on that. But also what you said in the intro about the video game companies have learned how to keep kids in the game. They've learned how to make it addictive. Nolan refers to it as flow. There's a book written by a name I can't pronounce. it's about 18 letters long. And he wrote a book called Flow, which is about keeping things challenging so that our interest level is peaked, but not challenging so hard that we can't get the answer. And that's where the rigor for kids comes from, because they want to get to the next level in that game, and they're not going to give up easily. If they're not going to throw the game to the side unless it was a really lousy game to play. They're going to find a way to get to the level they're after. And that's where video games have really changed the conversation, because for decades, and I am one of the parents who was like telling my son, get off your video games and go do your homework. And then during the pandemic, we were asking kids to do their homework on the same device that they're playing games on.
And, interesting.
You know, when I was a kid, I would have had a hard time making that choice. Fun here? And why isn't education fun?
Yeah. Like,
why does it have to be agonizing for so, I mean, yes, I'm Dr. Leah Haynes, but I went back to school in my adult years after my kids finished their education I went back and did my graduate degrees because I wanted to. It was interesting to me then. As a kid, school was not interesting. I'm dyslexic and nobody was testing for that in those early years. So school was humiliating. Every time a paper came back to me, I flipped it over as quickly as I could on my desk so that none of the other kids would see it. And I think that for most people, their early experiences with humiliation come in the classroom.
Wow.
And, you know, a lot of times we're measuring things in the moment that tell a child, oh, you're not very bright. You're just not very smart. And that's not the case. Often it's just that that particular child doesn't learn the way you're trying to teach. And now we have, you know, artificial intelligence makes it almost simple to do individualized learning plans now. Find out what a child's interest is and send them down that rabbit hole. They'll find all kinds of other things that intersect with their interests that may expand their interests. And maybe it won't. Maybe that kid wants to be a garage mechanic so badly that he is going to study cars for the rest of his life. And we can force them to look at these other things and learn about these other things. But you know, they won't do well at them.
When you mentioned AI and education in the context of the conversation so far, it made me think that potentially even learning math within the parameters of what is of interest. Some kids right. might be interested in animals, and so we're learning to count animals. Somebody might be interested in astronauts, and we're learning to count astronauts or stars or satellites yeah. or something.
Yeah, and then getting them interested in statistics. Like, most kids have some interest in either a sport or an animal or something that you can get them thinking about stats from. Like, sports is an easy one. You know, who's your favorite player? Let's look up their stats. How do you think they counted this? Where did they come up with these numbers? Nice. So you're not telling the kid anything. You're asking the child questions that get them thinking about broader things that they're interested in.
And they want to know.
Yeah, and they want to know. Like, teaching math to kids out of any context is just ridiculous and torturous.
Wow.
You know, the other thing that really troubles me about education in general is that we expect kids... We as parents, we as educators, we want kids to get A's and B's in everything. And not, like, I don't know any adults who are good at everything.
Mm.
And why do we think kids should be?
Wow.
Right? Why can't we honor the things that they are good in and then help them feel good about themselves as a result of those things? And then gently offer other ideas that intersect with their interest to help them broaden their interests. But, you know, part of the problem right now is that kids are either bored in class because they could be going much further and they're not allowed, or they're overwhelmed yeah. because there's too much coming at them and they don't understand it. And when kids are not comfortable, the reaction is usually behavior issues. Kids aren't just being bratty to be bratty. Their mind's wandering. They're lost, and they're trying to distract from the fact that they don't know what you're talking about. And if we had individualized learning, a couple of things happen. If kids are working on things they're interested in, they tend to stay interested longer. And they don't have an audience. If you're going to act up and everybody's busy working on their stuff, then the kid that's trying to act up doesn't have an audience for it. So there's not as much interest in it. But really, you know, what Nolan and I've been working on, and what, you know, at the foundation, I've been like 13 years there, and we work in education, making as much as possible hands-on learning. So our goal there, we build maker spaces in schools. We've built 560 maker spaces, mostly in local, like Southern California and up to Fresno, that whole region. But, in a perfect classroom, there would never be an adult at the front of the room telling the kids anything. There would be adults in the room. There would be teachers in the room, But the teachers in the room would be mentors and coaches and social conveners for the kids. They wouldn't be the person telling you all the things you need to know.
So that just, I don't have a picture for that. So are there still like 30 kids in a room, and how is that then individualized, or please go further.
Yeah. So Nolan and I talked about this a lot because we actually wrote out a whole, like, this is how the perfect day would be in a classroom. And we wouldn't be batching kids by age. We'd be putting them in groups based on interest areas.
Wow.
And in those interest areas, you would have the senior person there who might be a 10-year-old who just happens to be passionate about this idea or this area and has done all kinds of research. So they end up being one of the leads in the group.
Wow.
And you have a novice who's like, hey, I'm kind of interested in this area and I'd really like to know what you guys are studying. So that person comes in, but age is not important. Once you're past the third or fourth grade, you know how to read, or at least we hope you do. And you have some basics under your hat. But at that point, you could start working in interest groups. And really for the teacher, if she say she's got 30 kids in the room and there are 8 different interest groups. So she spends probably about 6 minutes per group coming up with AI, working on what do I want this group working on this week? What do I want that group working on this week? And then the students are either building a prototype, so really working in a makerspace to build a prototype of something that is relevant to their area of interest. And then they would use that as their research and development sort of portion of the study. And they would compare notes with each other. This is all very collaborative. So they're working in groups, not sitting in rows. They're just maybe at a table together as a group. And in that group, you'll find that one person is going to be a great scribe who wants to take notes and keep all of this, like all the information together. And there are going to be idea people. And then there are going to be other people who really want to get up and start building a prototype of something. And the prototype doesn't have to be an invention they're going to create. It could just be something that they're building together that helps to anchor in the learning. So mm-hmm. We know that the kids, not just kids, people remember about 10% of what they read 2 weeks later, and they remember 90% of what they did. So if you've just read a book about the missions, for example, then you pick something out of that book that really had an impact on your group and you make that. And you will remember the fact that you made that, and it will help you remember more of that reading because now you've made something that anchors in the reading. So you can probably move that, what you remember 2 weeks later, up to 35 and 40% of the reading by making something. So then, you know, the rest of the day is you're in groups for all of the workshops, and then you're making things. And then there's whatever it is, a 45 minute or an hour, it depends on the grade level, where it's physical activity. And during that time, you are getting your heart rate up. So you might want to go to the gym and dance, or maybe you're going to go to the basketball hoops and shoot some hoops, or you're going to run the track. You're going to be doing something physical. So when you come back after that 45 minutes, your heart rate's up. We know you remember more when your heart rate's up. So getting kids like really twice a day, first thing in the morning, there's a chunk of time where it's physical activity. And then again, early in the afternoon. But it would be a whole, you know, this isn't about tweaking education around the edges. This is really about a complete overhaul. We have like 16 versions of the iPhone, which has been out for about that many years. And we're still doing education the way we did it 200 years ago. It's just ridiculous.
What role, you talked about the teacher walking around with AI. What role would the electronics play as far as gamification in the classroom?
Right. Well, if we're successful at ExoDexa, there will be a video game. And you know, Nolan's involved. So I say it'll be a video game that kids would want to play on a Saturday. This is not going to be a game where they say, oh, this is just education, I have to do it. This is going to be very game forward. It just happens to teach things. But you would have the teacher, when the kids are working independently, individually, the teacher would have a screen that would have everyone's algorithm on it. And when she sees somebody stuck somewhere, or he sees somebody stuck somewhere, teacher gets up and goes over and just checks in on that student. Hey, how's it going today? And then the student has a chance to say, oh, I'm really stuck on this. Or they don't want to say they're stuck on something. So the teacher asks, can you show me where you are with this? Because I find your project really fascinating. Mm. And that way the student gets in there and starts talking about it, and what's frustrating them will come out at that. So teachers, it's a whole different training for teachers, but a much more fulfilling role for them than the way it is now. And, you know, we're losing, I think it's something like 40% of our new teachers after 5 years. And that's not sustainable. And I don't know what the research tells us about why they're leaving, but what my gut tells me about why they're leaving is these kids that are now graduating from teachers college are digital natives. And we're asking digital natives to step back 20 years in technology to teach in our system. And that's just ridiculous.
Whoa. Wow.
Right? How do we keep teachers engaged if we're not letting them bring to the, because even with AI, you know, I am a real champion of AI in education, partly because it's not going anywhere. And it's up to us to teach kids how to use it effectively, what to see it as their study partner and their research assistant, but to see it as their assistant, not somebody who's going to do it all for them. And, you know, I have a real solution for the fear of plagiarism and having AI just do the whole paper for the students. And I think it's a real benefit to the teacher as well.
So is it something you could share?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, okay. And it costs nothing. So the idea is just that instead of having the kids write their paper, hand it in, and then the teacher goes off and spends her weekend or his weekend grading papers, you have the child write the paper, hand in their, if they've used AI, they hand in their paper with the full conversation they had with AI. And then you have them present the paper to the class and do a Q&A. And if they learned the material that they're presenting, it's none of our business how they finish the paper. It levels the playing field for people like me who are dyslexic. You can have the ideas, you can talk the ideas out, but putting it on paper doesn't work so well. This makes it work.
Wow. Interesting. Well, you've mentioned Nolan Bushnell, and for those who don't know, he's a legendary father of the video game industry, as he is known. And together with him, you have written a book. The book is The Future of Education.
Shaping the Future. Yeah.
Of Education. Right. The shaping has dropped off my page. Sorry about that.
Oh, sorry. No, that's okay. Oh, and I bet because I sent you an old PDF.
Okay, so shaping the and you shaped it differently, even
we
better.
Did.
So Shaping the Future of Education, The ExoDexa Manifesto by Nolan Bushnell and Dr. Leah Haynes. And so in this, you put it right out there. You say this book is a manifesto. These pages constitute a blueprint for changing the world through the way we educate our children and everyone throughout life, which we want to talk about in a moment. Make no mistakes, this book is a recruiting document. We have changed, if we change education, we can change the world. So what about everyone else?
You know, we want people to be lifelong learners, right? And you have to be these days. I mean, just look in the last 20 years, how much has changed in the working community. Mm. And if we weren't willing to engage and learn and move forward, then we're going to get left behind. One of the first speakers I heard talking to educators about AI was in the 2020 when OpenAI first, ChatGPT first hit the market, and the teachers had their hair on fire. And the speaker said, the people who are going to lose their jobs to AI are the people who refuse to engage with it. And I think that is really well summed up, because AI will make a lot of jobs go away. And it's sort of on us to help the students of today see what those jobs are and make choices that honor their future. But that, like everybody being a lifelong learner, we need that. I mean, we are a generation, and I'm, you know, I'm closer to Nolan than I am to his kids, so in terms of age. And I think we are from a couple of generations that thought when you finished school, you didn't have to learn anymore. And that has not served the country or the world well. We need people who feel like learning is a benefit in life. It's not a hardship. It's not, but if all of those early feelings of humiliation came from the classroom, you're not inclined to see yourself as a lifelong learner or want to be a lifelong learner. It's, you know, I was really blessed with a family life and parents who adored their kids and adored each other. So all of the tough stuff that happened out in the world to me didn't crush me. If I were growing up in a home where there was a lot of tension and dissension and anger, and then I went to school and I felt humiliated and, you know, that young man in Uvalde who killed all those people went to his fifth grade classroom to start that. What happened to that kid in school that was still there 20 years later that brought him back to that classroom for that kind of destruction? I mean, those are things that I think we have not addressed as a culture that education could help with if we could move it out of the Stone Ages.
Out of the Stone Ages. Speaking of parents, my father used to say a teacher can open the can show you the door, can even open the door for you, but you have to go through it. And there's much more to learn past what the teacher has shared and taught you. And
you had a wise father.
He was a teacher himself. So
all right.
So a professor, in fact. So he, absolutely, we the lifelong learner. I love that you've added that to this conversation. And are you saying that also children starting in the way that you're suggesting, they will be more interested or able to continue to learn?
Yeah, because research will be second nature to them. They'll have an interest. They'll want to know where all that information is. Where can I find it? Whereas right now we have a system that, oh, that person has all the information. They give me some of it, and then I know this much. We didn't learn anything about how to find that information. Then maybe later in school, you did a little bit of research to write a paper. You know, but even that, like now, that's not so bad either, because I think kids have been using Google and Alexa for that for ages, like for asking for information from AI. But I see it as a benefit if we as a society learn how to manage it. And that, you know, now touch on politics for a minute, but the bill that's before the Senate right now, I have not read it, but I've been told that there's a clause in there that does not allow for any regulation of AI for a decade. And that is really dangerous. We need regulation on AI right away. In a decade, it'll be too late. It will not be able to be reined in.
So there's the good side and the bad side to the
as AI with everything, right?
Is there's so much more we can say about this and about the book. Of course, the book is available on Amazon and where books are sold, and we have all the links to your companies and all that on the Life Changes Show page. When we have the Exo Dexa, is it Exo? I'm going to spell that
because Exo. D-E-X-A. Exo means out of the box. Dexa means into the game.
Out of the box and into the game. Nice. And that's .com? Exodexa.com?
Yes, exodexa.com.
Okay.
Yes.
And then the other website we have, 2-Bit Circus. And .org.
That's .org.
.org. Yeah. And we're such fans. We don't want the conversation to end without you telling us about Two Bit Circus.
Well, Two Bit Circus is a, you know, it's a, the coming together of four nonprofits, imagination.org, Steam Carnival, Trash for Teaching, which is an organization gathers, manufactures clean trash and uses it in these maker spaces that we build. And and Two Bit Circus. So that was, and now we have a new nonprofit joining us actually called Griffin Ed, which the Tim Griffin, who was an educator for 18 years in South Central LA, has one of his goals is to put K through 8 curriculum to music. And so he has about 6 CDs of it now that he's signed over to us, and we're building curriculum around the music. So that's
wow.
us.
As kids, we were fans. I'm sure a lot of us were. I was of Schoolhouse Rock. So that reminds me of that.
Yes, yes. And there hasn't been anything since Schoolhouse Rock. So we're in time.
And there's so much more to learn. So you've actually shared what feels like a lot of good news. I would imagine as all of this is coming forward, or you're bringing all this forward, there are a lot of blockages. And difficulties in people who just don't see it. But, and I know you're working on that. Is the future bright for the children in education?
I am an incurable optimist, so I am going to say yes to that no matter what. But I'm not optimistic without some realism. And it's tough right now. And I think education, even people inside the education world know that there's a problem, but it's hard from inside the system to fix it. So I'm blessed to be working in the system as an outsider, and we can bring options to the table that they haven't been able to inside. So I am optimistic, and I do think that within this next 5 to 10 years, education it'll change, because it has to. They now know enrollment did not go back up to its pre-pandemic numbers when we got back to school.
Mm.
And a lot of that, it used to be mostly religious choices for homeschooling. That's not the case anymore. Now people are keeping their kids out of school because they don't believe they're getting the education they need in the school. So I think there's room for change and interest from inside the system to see change made.
Well, thank you. That's a great place to end. And yet I do recall that earlier in the conversation, I wanted to make clear that some of what you're sharing sounded trade school-ish, but it's not, right?
No, I think even the kid who starts out being interested in being a car mechanic, if he's exposed to other areas of automotive interest, he could become an engineer and a car designer or manufacturer. Like that, it's finding out what kids' interests are doesn't mean you keep them at the lower level of those interests. You just have something to educate them with because they want to be there.
And they can move across the board saying, okay, this played out.
Right. And at their own pace.
So, okay. I could talk to you about this all evening, I can tell, and thank you. It's very interesting. And so again, the book is
shaping.
Oh my gosh, shaping the future of education, the ExoDexa Manifesto, Nolan Bushnell and Dr. Leah Haynes. What about the rest of life? So career, I get. But family, relationships, and actually I heard teamwork in there as well.
Yeah, exactly. When I was a kid, they called that cheating, but we want kids to work together. I don't know if you've ever had a job where you didn't have to get along with other humans to do it.
Interesting.
Right. We want people to be able to collaborate.
Interesting. Well, it is time, because we need that in the world. Shaping the Future of Education. And thank you for doing that for all who will be able to benefit from all that you are doing. That's the book.
Thank you.
The Exodexa Manifesto, Nolan Bushnell and Dr. Leah Haynes, who has been our guest this evening. All the best to you, and we look forward to more with the Exodexa Manifesto and also 2-Bit Circus Foundation and all that you're doing.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dr. Leah Haynes. Oh my gosh, I'm excited. I wonder what it would be like for me to sit down in a classroom today. I think I would pick a class that I have interest in, but she brought up a really good point, a lot of them. But kids might not, so much is shared with kids that they might not be interested in. They have to take the class.
And so much is not shared with kids that they would be interested in and or right. might actually need. Because I think a lot of the information, as she said, we've been doing for hundreds of years, is distraction education. It's not really accretive to navigating today's world.
Wow. So not only do they forget it soon after, the things that they do need, they have to find someplace else to get it, or they don't get it, and then they fail at life. Well,
there's no heart connection. It's all cerebral, right? It's the regurgitation. It's the mental imprint, and then that goes away because there was no joy. In fact, maybe we should change the name to played school.
Play school.
Played school.
Played school.
Instead of trade school.
Oh, played school.
But that's, you know, if once you've played in the game, once you've played it, it sticks. And you remember that. And you talk about those times. And do you remember when we were in the garage and we used to do this, or we went down to the park and we used to do, you know, those things, they stick with you forever. Not very often are you like, do you remember when we were in algebra and we, no.
Right. You know, actually.
Or unless it was, we wish we were playing something, you know, more fun.
I have to say, there's this one line, several lines, but one in particular that really got me. I actually wrote it down. I thought it was going to be in the monologue, where they describe in the book of a child going to school, and they use this line where the child is there looking for information, not validation. Like, wow, that really hit me. How many kids go to school prepared to receive information?
Well, and we without, unbeknownst to, I think, parents and or the kids themselves, we've shifted the way they're learning. We abruptly changed the whole dynamic. Before, it's, yeah, touch that, experience that, play with that, jump in the puddle, mm-hmm. throw and catch, run, make race. Yeah. Exactly, create, sandbox. And then we're like, nope, sit down and listen.
And read that.
And read that and repeat it.
Interesting.
And, yeah.
Well, that's why we need Shaping the Future of Education. And that's why Dr. Leah Haynes was with us today. So thank you, Dr. Leah Haynes. And with that, it's time for our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Tanya, and I hope you can help me once again. I have lost my patience and am finding myself agitated and irritated when things don't happen as quickly as they should. How can I calm myself down and change the agitation and irritation to a peaceful state of mind?
Thank you, dear Tanya, for being so honest and for sharing your emotional state. Feeling agitated and irritated, especially when things feel out of your control, can be overwhelming and exhausting. So let's look at some gentle and effective ways to calm your nervous system and shift from agitation to a peaceful state of mind. The first thing I do when irritation flares up is to take a moment to breathe. I inhale slowly for a count of four, and I hold for a count of four, and then exhale slowly for a count of six. I repeat this 3 to 5 times. This breathing exercise activates our parasympathetic nervous system, the rest and digest state, calming your body and brain. It really helps for us to breathe consciously. And, Tanya, it is important to pay attention to your inner dialogue. If you're thinking things like, this should be faster, or why isn't this working, you will be sabotaging yourself. So please change your thoughts and say out loud, everything is unfolding in perfect timing. I do what I can do and I trust in the divine to do the rest. And know, dear friend, that saying this isn't denial, it's choosing peace over pressure. One of the most helpful things I do when not at peace is I chant Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, which can be very calming and centering for so many people as it is for me. This is a Buddhist chant, and Nam-myoho Renge Kyo is often translated as devotion to the mystic law of the Lotus Sutra, symbolizing the belief that every person has the power to overcome suffering and manifest their highest potential. This affirmation can lift feelings of powerlessness and replace fear with hope and inner resolve. When I chant this, it pulls my attention into the present moment, away from obsessive thoughts or emotional spirals. Just a few minutes of focused chanting can bring a noticeable sense of peace. It is also important for you to uncover the root of the emotion and from there bring it into the light for healing. You can do this by writing this question and then answering it quickly. What's really going on that I need to look for and heal? The answers are usually extremely simple and help me calm myself down. And let's remember that agitation is often a signal that your soul is overextended and under-nurtured. So please be extra gentle with yourself. You deserve peace, not because you've earned it, but because it is your natural state underneath the challenges of life.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, calm your mind and write her peacefully at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And for our performance segment, we have an independent multi-instrumentalist, producer, songwriter based out of Nashville, Tennessee. It's Saint Finnegan. Welcome, Finnegan, to the Life Changes Show.
So grateful. Thank you so much.
So great to have you on the show. Interesting that our conversation it somewhat revolved around learning and being a child and how our curiosity is bred out of us or something. What were you saying along those lines?
Yeah, exactly. Well, before that, first, I have to say, if Dr. Haynes is still here, what a maven. That touched my heart. Right. Seriously, thank you for having such an impeccable heart posture for children. The element of play, the possibilities of future education. She has taken on a responsibility, and responsibility is the ability to respond, and this is what she's doing. And I hope to see this pivot in the system before we get the next iPhone 20 or I don't know what number we're on. But nice. I was touched by that, and also Dorothy, absolutely precious. But yeah, man, I'm grateful to be on here. Yeah, I was mentioning that it seems as though we have this wisdom within us as children. This knowing, and we get kind of pushed through a system that doesn't allow that to exercise and express itself naturally. And just like Dr. Haynes was noting too, it's replaced with other knowledge that's fed to us, you know, as truth or as a way. And so by doing so, it kind of numbs our own unique, authentic expression. And what I loved about what Dr. Haynes was saying is that we need to curate environments that specifically help and inspire kids to be unique, because I truly believe all human beings have this type of gift within them. And it should look different, right? If we had all the same puzzle pieces, or let's say we all had the same 5 puzzle pieces, you can't really build a crazy puzzle out of that if we have the same shapes. Mm-hmm. We should look different. We should move different. We should talk different. And so, yeah. But
well said.
Yeah, it's like we're coming back to we our 20s is like we're deprogramming what we're programmed, and then we're starting to remember that that child in us.
And you're writing cool music about that.
Yeah.
And the audiences are growing and listening and feeling into what you're saying. It feels like it's time for this music, these sentiments to be on radio internationally, like on lots of stations, right? It's going to be on radio tonight. It's already on radio. I know. But we need more of this. And so we'll talk about that. And actually, interestingly enough, before we play your first song, I didn't expect what you were going to say, in a sense that like music came almost as an accident, although I don't know if I believe in accidents or kind of because of an accident. What happened?
Yeah, music came into my life. Originally, my father is also a multi-instrumentalist, and he, you know, we would sit down and listen to records. And so I had music in my life, but I wasn't really making music. I was far more interested in sports, and an injury happened, you know, in my early teens where I broke my back. And I was telling one of you earlier, you know, you can only sit on your bed staring at a guitar for so long. And yeah, you know, I stopped sports and dove straight into production. And that's kind of like the beginning of the journey.
What were the first songs about?
The first songs, I started a project with my little brother, and they were just, I don't know, it was probably, when I started producing music, it was probably like 21, and so I was in this really introspective season of my life, and questioning things, and digging into like etymology, and the what words mean, you know what I mean? So it was a very like cerebral album, but yeah, it was the first one for me. So
wait, are you saying you're out of that phase?
I would say I'm more in the heart, or at least I'm in the heart. Yeah, or connecting the two. Yeah.
Well, let's hear a song, and then we'll talk more about that as well.
Wonderful.
So, what's the first thing we're gonna hear today?
This is a song I wrote last month called Look at God.
Just last month. Okay, so what inspired this? If you can share.
Yeah, you know, I finished an album. It took a year to write. It was written for a book called The Inner Work. And so it was a long project. And so I released that in March. And then, I don't know, I just came out of this project with a fresh look on writing and production, and you know, I've been wanting to possibly get into festivals and shows, and so I wanted to change my production to be really kind of simple and easy to play live, and this was the first one. And I just wanted to make a catchy song that people can dance to and move to, and no matter what walks of life, they can celebrate, you know, whatever they believe in. You know, almost like look at God, right? Like look at God could be like look at the nature around me, or look at my child, right? Or look at this beautiful meal in front of me, or look at the blessings and the miracles that exist all around us. So that is what the song means.
Well, it's catchy, it's danceable, and it's here on the Life Changes Show. Thank you for letting us share this here tonight. It's pre-recorded. Here's Saint Finnegan's song, Look at God.
Look at God. Grateful for the love and the peace and the joy inside of me. It don't stop. All the miracles and miracles and miracles and miracles repeat, man. I'm in awe. I'm surrounded by the seraphim and cherubim with wings up on the feet, man. Look at God. You know I'm blessed as can be. Blessed as can be. I just say it twice for the G. Let me say something to you. And let me say something to you. Hallelujah, hallelujah. You better dance at the spirit moving through your eyes. Shake it. Say something to you. Let me say something to you. Hallelujah, hallelujah. You better dance at the spirit moment through your eyes. Shake. Look at, look at, look at, look at, look at, look at God. Look at, look at, look at, look at, look at, look at God. Look at, look at, look at, look at, look at, look at God. Look at, 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 look
for the pain and the weight that was taken off of me. It don't stop. I'm on some obstacles and obstacles as possible if you can just believe, man. I'm in awe. I'm surrounded by the seraphim and cherubim, my wings up on the feet, man. Look at God. You know I'm blessed as can be. Blessed as can be. How to say it twice for the G. Let me say something to you. Now let me say something to you. Hallelujah, hallelujah. You better dance if the spirit moving through your eyes. Shake it. Let me say something to you. Let me say something to you. Hallelujah, hallelujah. You better dance if the spirit moving through your eyes. Shake it.
Look at God. Look at you, Saint Finnegan. Saint Finnegan, that's abbreviated. So ST period as in Saint Finnegan, FINNIKIN. Find him right on all the socials and YouTube channel and et cetera, including Spotify and TikTok. And by the way, we have a video of his song Monarch on the Life Changes Show page. Or Saint Finnegan. Find that there. All right, Finnegan, speaking of etymology of words, can we talk about your name and how you broke it down?
Yeah. So Saint Finnegan, I wanted to make like a, it's revealed to me that like the word saint to me feels like it means whole. And that could also be taken as holy, so whole, that complete. And then Finnegan's broken up into three words, Finn, I, and kin. And Finn is related to fish. Fish is related to like the Ithacus or like the Piscean age. So it's connected to like consciousness, like Christ consciousness, which is not necessarily a person, but the consciousness that's embodied. And then I is the self, right? Like I, the inner dwelling. And then kin is blood, family, friendship, community. So it's essentially the project or the music that I create is to help people feel whole and express that love, that unconditional love through the self and out and shared amongst the people and community.
So deep. Well, speaking of deep, thank you for sharing that with us. Speaking of deep, before we hear this next song, we have to talk about Energy Hospital because this song actually emanates from that. But we wanted to talk about this anyway. Sounds interesting. You created this?
Yeah. You're talking about Energy Hospital?
Yeah.
Yeah. Energy Hospital is, a concept that I came up with shortly after my sister passed away. It was inspired by that, which was she passed away from cancer, so my whole life kind of shifted into this huge spotlight on health and wellness and mental health. And so I opened up a project called Energy Hospital where I would essentially open up a list for people to email me what they're moving through, whether it be they have an illness, an autoimmune disorder, some sickness or trauma, and I would curate a song specifically for that person. And I wrote 133 songs for 133 people all over the world. And this is, the next song is one of those songs that I wrote for a gentleman named Sebastian.
Wow. Before we hear that song, I didn't know about the sister, I'm so sorry. And so what, after 5 of these songs or 10 or 20, 25, 30, how were you changing?
Mm-hmm. I was realizing...
Not to mention the sister part, I mean, but just mm-hmm. in this process.
Yeah, no, very good. You know, I was hearing a lot of what sickness is from people. And as we see this stuff on the outside, we also recognize that this is also existing within us as it is a reflection. And so I started learning deeply what dis-ease and illness is and how it is manifested in the body. And so it just catapulted me into my own inner work and my own journey within and healing, you know, emotional stuff that we store in our, you know, our fascia and our nervous system, like they were talking about earlier, Dorothy. And so, yeah, it kind of got me into the whole realm of true wealth. I said wealth, health.
Health is wealth.
Health is wealth, exactly, yeah. So yeah, that's kind of what got me into it.
Wow. You know, actually, and you said wealth, so health is wealth, happiness mm-hmm. is wealth, knowledge mm-hmm. is wealth, and potentially we might want to look at the fact that we attribute wealth to just pretty much one thing, mm-hmm. when mm-hmm. We might be taking it that power away from all these other things, and mm-hmm. This kind of conversation and the music you're producing is bringing that wealth to this, these topics. And mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing. Give us an idea of some of the titles, because we're going to hear Grateful, but I know there's mm-hmm. another one that resonated with me, and it's I Surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a couple more, because you did a whole album, right? Yeah, well, you could have many, but you did one so far.
Yeah, I have 5 albums that were these Energy Hospital songs. It was a lot of. I didn't release all 133 songs, but I, the album Pupa, P-U-P-A, Pupa, is all Energy Hospital songs. So every single one of those songs is written for a person. And then the whole album Remember, and then the whole album Rejoice, the whole album Milk and Honey, and the whole album Divine. Those were all Energy Hospital songs. Wow. Or albums, full-length albums.
Where do we find those?
Those are all on my Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, YouTube Music. Wherever you stream music, they're available.
Okay. And again, Finnekin, F-I-N-N-I-K-I-N, Saint Finnekin. Well, I'm grateful that we're going to get to hear this song. It's pre-recorded by Saint Finnekin, Grateful, here on the Life Changers Show.
I'm grateful full to the brim. I am. I'm grateful more than I ever been. Yes, I'm grateful, full to the brim. I am grateful, more than I've ever been. Yes, I am
grateful I woke up again. Woke up and took a breath again, Yahweh. Looked up and saw the sun again. I'm grateful for the eyes I have. Amen. I'm moving on my toes again. I'm grateful for the wind against my face. I'm grateful for the sensation of a loved one's embrace. I'm grateful for the lemon juice upon my lips. I'm grateful I can smile when I'm tasting it. I'm grateful, full to the brim. I am. Yes, I'm grateful.
more than I've ever been. It's true, yeah, it's true, yeah. I'm grateful, full to the brim. I am. Yes, I'm grateful, more than I've ever been. It's true, yeah, it's true, yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow. I hadn't heard that one, actually. I heard the beginning, and I thought I want to save it for the show so I can get the full effect, and I got it. Thank you. Saint Finnegan. Thank you so much. Finnikin. Saint, S-T, period, like the abbreviated saint. We don't have to talk about it if you want to. We are coming to a close, but did you write a song for you about your sister?
I've written a couple songs about that. One of them's called Ballerina Heavenly, and then another one was off of this past album that I wrote. The album's called The Inner Work. It's the one that's about the book, The Inner Work. It's TikTok's best-selling book. And the song on that album is called Loss. It's the book is going through the themes of consciousness, if you're familiar with Hawkins. So like the lower themes of a contracted state of consciousness, starting with rejection, judgment, guilt, all the way up to love and inner mm-hmm. peace and freedom. So I wrote a song for each of those themes. And loss is one of those themes in the lower contracted state. And I wrote it about the experience of my sister passing. So, yeah.
Wow.
Well, but she's here with me today. She's here, you know, right now. So
she is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. We look forward to hearing more of your music and sharing more of your music here on the Life Changes Show. In the meantime, thank you for having shared your story, your heart, and your music here tonight.
Such an honor. I appreciate it.
Until we connect again, a big thank you to Saint Finnegan, our performance guest, and another big thank you to our interview guest, Dr. Leah Haynes. And with that is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeure, and our whole family here at the Life Changes Show, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.